That's what she said.
That's what she said.
That's what she said.
That's what she said. Well, that's what she said.
Welcome in to the latest episode of That's What She Said with Sarah Spain. I managed to keep most of my voice during Super Week, probably because this year I was only sent Thursday to Sunday. I flew back before the big game and watched it at a friend's watch party. It was my first time watching at a Super Bowl, like just at a house party, in over a decade, which was actually pretty cool and a little bit more relaxed than when you're at the stadium trying to figure out what your story is going to be and whether you've got the right passes to get down on the field or in the locker room or wherever else. And what a game. What's crazy to me is all the stories that I'm hearing now, we're recording this the day after, of people who left their parties early or who went to bed thinking it was a blowout. Just the phases of that game to go from what seemed like a total rout and totally unexpected dominance from the Falcons to that finish. And I'll fully admit I was pulling for the Falcons, not only because I predicted them and I will be muted on Around the Horn on Tuesday for my pick, but also because I wanted to see the next generation, Matt Ryan, you know, fully becoming elite, as they say, and a whole group of fans in the Falcons fandom getting to celebrate. It felt like this kind of season of sports, not year since we're now in 2017, but it felt like this season of sports was a lot of like long held, like, loyal fans getting what they wanted in the Cavs and the Cubs. And unfortunately for Falcons fans and for a great deal of the country that was ready for a new winner, the Patriots did what the Patriots do. And it was an exciting game at the end, but we can all admit that other than the fact that I won $275 in squares because I had 0-0 at the beginning and 8-8 later, and the score was keeping me money-wise happy early on. The score was you know, nothing or lopsided, and it wasn't a great game. It didn't seem like it was going to go down in history, but boy, did it. And the ads, the commercials, were not as exciting as usual. There weren't the ones that you remember of the crazy animals. There was no, you know, Clydesdales making friends with puppies. There was no weird puppy monkey baby. There's a couple funny ones that kind of went the usual way, but there was a lot of commercials with messages, a lot of commercials that were showing brand courage and brand associating with like some deeper held statement about something. And we see that maybe once or twice during a Super Bowl. And this time it felt like the most memorable commercials were the ones that really got into, you know, some bigger issues, not necessarily political, because we make everything politics now, even when it's just social issues or commentary that relates to all human beings. We try to split it and make it divisive even when it shouldn't be. But it did feel like, they were appealing to the larger conversations and the larger social issues going on in our country. And it was interesting because I kind of jokingly tweeted, a lot of white nationalists out home on their living rooms not liking these ads because they were multicultural. They featured different languages and different races and ethnicities and colors and backgrounds and some very overt statements about what being American means. And it was interesting, the comedian and actor Michael Ian Black tweeted out something that I think is exactly what I was thinking. He said, "This is where we are as a country. Any commercial that celebrates American values is interpreted as an insult to the president." And it did feel like there were a lot of people complaining about how they just wanted to watch football and they didn't want to hear about politics. And this was anti-Trump and this was anti-government. And other than the ad that said, "We're in for 4 years of bad hair," none of them were really, and shout out to that company for just the onions and just not even, no subtlety whatsoever. But a lot of them were really just trying to appeal to a wide swath of Americans. And the fact that that is seen as choosing a side is really upsetting and really scary and sad. Sad exclamation point. But that's enough of that for now. I just wanted to say that was the feeling that I got when I was watching that. A lot of the ads really spoke to how I'm feeling about everything, but it's kind of hard to digest to think that the messages being sent of inclusiveness might be divisive in any way. I'm going to talk about the game, the sports side of it, the commercials, the social issue side of it, and a bunch of other stuff with my guest, Elika Sadehi. You've seen her on ESPNU. Doing College Football Daily and a couple other shows. So my interview with her coming up next.
That's what she said.
Aren't you tired of guessing what your loved one wants for Valentine's Day? Wouldn't you love an easy, fail-proof way to look like a pro? Well, this year, ProFlowers is making it easier than ever by taking all the guesswork out. On top of their already low prices, right now you can get one dozen assorted roses with a free glass vase for $19.99 plus shipping and handling. Or upgrade, and for $9.99 more, you get two dozen assorted roses with the free glass vase. Just go to ProFlowers.com, type in my code, WHATSHESAID. Support my show by supporting my sponsors. Use my code, WHATSHESAID. Pick your flowers and check out in 2 minutes. Order now. Have it delivered on Valentine's Day to home or to work. And when your loved ones, coworkers see the gift, you'll know that you did Valentine's Day right. They're guaranteed to last 7 days or your money back. ProFlowers just sent me some a few days ago, and they are gorgeous. Here's the only way to get one dozen assorted roses with a free glass vase and free chocolates starting at $19.99. Go to ProFlowers.com and use my code WHATSHESAID. Support my show by supporting my sponsors. ProFlowers.com. Click on the microphone and type in the code what she said.
That's what she said.
Happy to be joined by Elika Sadehi. You've seen her on ESPNU's College Football Daily and a number of other sports entities. We're going to talk about what she's up to now, what she's up to next, how she got her TV gigs and her quote-unquote real job, her super week and otherwise. Thanks for making time for me, Elika.
I always have time for you, Sarah, anytime.
I know, you do. Socially, work-wise, whatever it takes. We're both perhaps slightly below 100% right now. We both have returned from Houston, another victorious super week. And so I have a mild party voice, but I really kept it together this year, like a real professional.
I thought so. You see, yeah. Like every time I saw you two nights, Friday and Saturday night, and both times you definitely seemed like you were having a good time, but you definitely had it together.
Yes.
I'm impressed.
Yeah. You know, now that my job is like slightly more important and people are actually listening, I try to, you know, limit the times that I just go ham, and I allow myself at least 2 full days of recovery, which I didn't have. So, kept it together. So let's talk about your super week. You always manage to get yourself to the good stuff. National championships, World Series, Super Bowls. And I'm usually there because of work. But before I was with ESPN full time where they were sending me, I was doing the straight hustle. And I feel like that's what you do. You know people and you get hookups and somehow you manage to find yourself at all the best stuff. How do you pull this off? Tell everyone that's listening your secrets.
You know what? Honestly, I think the secret just boils down to being a nice person. Like, I'm not, most of the things that I've seen you at recently weren't instances in which I specifically asked somebody for some sort of a hookup. It was like, I saw you at game 7 of the World Series, right? We actually coincidentally ended up being next to one another. Well, you did. I assisted a little bit, to be honest with you, but I was merely an accomplice. And, you know, in that instance, it was just I happened to meet somebody at a Super Bowl party 2 years ago. That person is pretty high up in MLB. Baseball is not really in, like, my top three list of favorite sports, so it's not something that I was necessarily trying to get something from another person, but we ended up having a really good conversation. We stayed in touch. We've discussed business opportunities and things like that over the 2 years since we've known each other. Early on in the playoffs, I have some friends who are big Cleveland Indians fans, and they were in Cleveland. And I happened to ask him if he had extra 2 tickets for like an early game against, I want to say it was the first series against the Red Sox. And so he kind of just kept me in mind for Cleveland stuff. And when they were going to the World Series, he was like, hey, if you're going to be in town, let me know. It just happened that game 7 was the only game I was going to be in town for. So I had mentioned it and
you got the good
he gave
one. Yeah.
me tickets. Yeah, it was amazing. Like, and I think a lot of it is just, you know, since I kind of have fallen into sports media over the last several years, which I know you mentioned and we can talk about if you'd like, I think the circle just happens to be closer to sports. And that's why the cool stuff that people think to offer me invites to just happens to be in that world, which is awesome. As somebody who grew up a big sports fan, getting to attend these things, like even as someone who self-admittedly is not the world's biggest baseball fan, I can obviously appreciate the immense opportunity in getting to go to game 7 of the World Series. So
yeah, absolutely.
So I think that's just being nice to people, you know. And if I can help them, I help them. There have been times where I've been able to pay some of these people back in random little opportunities I've gotten. So it's like a pay it forward and pay it back kind of thing.
Yeah, I feel like there's a circle of people that everyone was kind of like hustling around the same time. And, you know, some people are at different points in their career. Some people are younger or older. But once you form that group, it's like everyone's trying to hook each other up. And this has been, this was my 10th Super Bowl. And it always is like, you know, you run into people and you have like Mike Smith helped me out, Michael Smith, getting an extra ticket for the ESPN party. And then, you know, I found a couple of coworkers once for DirecTV. And so you just kind of like, you hope that, yeah, being a good person and looking out for other people pays off. And you always end up at the best stuff. So clearly it's working for you. Eli Apple, you were rolling with him a lot this week. And I think you were at a Giants playoff game with his mom. Is that right?
Uh-huh.
How did you strike up a friendship with either Eli Apple or his mom, Annie?
So I actually know the Apples through the mom, Annie, and that's actually a really funny story. I don't even think I've ever told you this, so it's really funny that you bring it up. But last football season, so 2015, was my first football season with ESPN, and I was doing College Football Daily on ESPNU on Thursdays alongside Matt Schick, and Jason Sehorn was the other analyst. So Jason and I would typically debate a couple big stories or whatever each week on the show. And it was probably October-ish, and he and I were having a debate about whether or not college football players should receive any form of compensation beyond what they're already getting. So Jason and I are having this big debate, and interestingly enough, as the former athlete himself, Jason Sehorn doesn't believe that college football players should be compensated in any way. I did, so we're having this big debate, and I walk off set and I'm looking at my phone and I'm getting all these tweets from Annie Apple. And she's like, who is this Ellica girl who's putting Jason Sehorn in his place? And so we ended up becoming Twitter friends because she was watching me debate Jason.
It happens all the time.
Yeah, I mean, Jason, I love Jason. He's a very nice guy. He tends to have a stick up his butt sometimes. I think like maybe because he didn't get paid in college, he doesn't want anyone else to. So Annie sided with me. We became Twitter friends. And shortly thereafter, I went to Columbus for an Ohio State game. And Annie invited me to the parents' tailgate because Eli was still playing for the Buckeyes at that time. So she invites me to the parents' tailgate. And I remember I was walking in with a couple of my girlfriends and we walk up. And Annie introduces me to the group by saying that there is now like a celebrity in their presence, which is hilarious because I was just on ESPNU one day a week. And immediately Ezekiel Elliott's mom looks at me and she's like, is that Steak and Stiff Arms? And I just thought,
oh my God,
like,
too
the
funny.
Funniest moment of the season was Zeke's mom calling me Steak and Stiff Arms. So that's how Annie.
Yes, that is your Twitter handle for those who don't know, which we will get to that later as well.
Yeah, that wasn't completely out of nowhere. But so that's how Annie and I became friends. And then so that would have been fall of 2015. And then summer of 2016, after Eli was drafted, the whole family was at the ESPYs. And so that's when I met the rest of the family. And they're just a group of really, really good, fun people. I mean, you know this. You've met them.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, Annie's awesome the best. She was on our She was on our First Take show when we did the all-female First Take over, and she was our guest. And she is just, like, super interesting, so funny. She has great takes and great opinions on things, and she comes from a unique perspective. She was rolling with Ezekiel Elliott's mom all Super Week, so I got to meet her, and they did a really good show the other day. It was, like, during a SportsCenter slot where they did a whole show with, like, six or seven NFL moms just talking about the Super Bowl experience. It was a cool watch.
Yeah, definitely. And Annie, Annie's obviously a strong, opinionated woman, but I think what makes her so great is it's been interesting to have her bring all of us into her perspective as an NFL mom. And that started with draft week, essentially. That's kind of when she blew up a little bit in terms of some of the things that she was tweeting and things that she was saying on the red carpet and people realizing how entertaining she can be.
Yeah.
But I think just getting the opportunity to kind of see like her perspective in that world has been really interesting.
Yeah. So on Saturday night, we were at the DirecTV party and Taylor Swift was performing. We're standing around waiting for her to go on because, of course, they lied to us and said she was going on with 10:30 sharp, I'm sure, so that it would be full when she arrived and there would be no, you know, playing to a half full, uninterested Super Bowl crowd, which, was not the case, because by the time she went on, people were like rabid and ready for Swifty. But we're standing there, and you get a text from Eli. He's like, what are you up to? And you're like, oh, I'm about to see Taylor Swift. And he had no idea she was playing. And he said, oh, man, I'd like to see her. Her music really speaks to me. And I love that you couldn't tell if he was joking or like, how does this NFL player, first of all, not know that she's here, not have a party in already that where you're going to have to get him in. And then just the tough NFL rookie with the her music speaks to me. I love that.
Okay, I do think that her music speaks to me was a little facetious on his part.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that part was serious. But the more and more I think about it, because to this moment, I still can't tell if he was serious or joking about any of it. even after, like, him having come to join us and, like, watching her. Listen, I'm 10 years older than Eli, so, like, what would Taylor, was like Taylor Swift the Britney of their generation? Is that equivalent?
Maybe one time, like, someone that he liked was dating the football captain and he was on the bleachers, you know, and he just.
And, like, I can't even believe singing. I got that reference.
I'm glad you did. I'm glad you did. Because you know what?
Swifty.
He was here the whole time, you could see. who knows? I don't know. Even when I was that age, I would not say that Britney's song spoke to me. I would be like, they're very catchy.
I think that was a joke.
I think that
was facetious. I think, like, he legitimately does maybe like Taylor.
Right.
And he's got a teenage sister, which he acknowledged a couple times.
Plus, everyone likes Taylor now. Like, it used to be lame. First, she was a country star, and you were like, ugh, okay, a couple songs that are not so bad, but she's annoying. Then it was like she's a terrible live singer. Then it was like she's always singing about boyfriends. And then as soon as she made the song making fun of herself, she pulled the Bieber. And everyone was like, shoot, we still want to hate her, but her songs are too good. And then she started making fun of herself, and she straightened her hair, which was a big moment for me, too. I think a lot of things in my life changed when I figured out how to straighten my hair. But, everybody loves
her.
Like, I loved
have been pivotal for many women of our generation.
Flatiron, yeah, career maker.
Yeah.
But I remember, like, there were two reporters that I hadn't met in person before, but that have come on shows with me before, Ben Volen and Sam Farmer. And they're from the Boston Globe and the LA Times. And they were right with us in our group. And, like, they had their cameras out. They were taking all these videos. And, like, these are, you know.
Well, Ben photobombed our picture.
Yes, Ben photobombed our photo. But I just love these men in their presumably 30s and 40s, like, with their videos out. Like, oh, it's Tay-Tay. Just, like, getting crazy. So you mentioned that you have a lot of friends that have rooting interests in Ohio and in Cleveland. You obviously, you're an Ohio State Buckeye, so you're always down for the Buckeyes. You are at every game that you can make, going crazy for that team. Who are your other rooting interests? Who are your pro teams?
You know, I Ohio State was always kind of the catalyst to me getting into sports in general. My parents met at Ohio State, and then I grew up in California when I was a kid. My dad would watch the big Ohio State games. That's kind of how I got into it. And thus I got into other sports from there. So Ohio State from a college basketball perspective as well. I also have, family members that went to USC and UCLA, just having grown up in California. So I appreciate watching Pac-12 football. And then as far as like pro teams go, I mean, I grew up a Laker fan. I mentioned earlier, like, baseball wasn't always like the biggest sport in my life. So I enjoy watching local teams do well. Like, if the Angels are doing well, that's fun to watch. If the Dodgers are doing well, that's fun to watch. But I don't really have a strong rooting interest either way. Pretty much the same with the Ducks and the Kings in terms of hockey. And then as far as NFL, even though football is my favorite sport, I mean, the Raiders and the Rams had left LA when I was fairly young. So the only, like, real tie that I had was my hatred of Raiders fans. So anyone who was playing the Raiders, like, if Raiders fans were sad, that kind of made me a little happy. And then, you know, now with the Rams and the Chargers, I mean, the Chargers are still, like San Diego's a lot farther from me than LA is. So now with both of them coming back to LA, I mean, I might see myself become a bit of a Chargers fan. Slowly, I think, like, there would be a bit of guilt that would come along with rooting for the Chargers,
right.
Like, knowing,
you know,
they were
kind of stolen. Yes.
Yes. Like, it feels really dirty. And so I don't know. So I guess we'll have to figure out how that's going to play out. But I mean, I as much as I enjoy watching NFL football, I don't really have a team that I care about all that much.
I love that we're completely opposite, because I don't care really at all about college sports. And I'm, you know, all Chicago everything. And then you are, like, you named off, like, five college teams before you got to any pro sports. So, and that is why you are.
It will always have my heart.
Right. That's why you're an ESPNU gal and talking about college football regularly.
Yep.
I want to get to, but first, I want to talk about a very hot take that you had on your Twitter today. Which gets us to Steak and Stiff Arms. Yeah, you know what's coming. What is the backstory, for those who don't already know it, of the Steak and Stiff Arms Twitter handle?
Honestly, it was probably like 2:30 in the morning, and I was like, I really should just come up with a Twitter handle. And
so
I was like, well,
hammered.
What am I going to be talking about? I'll be talking about
drunk.
Food and sports. That was the implication, but thanks for spelling that one out. Yeah. I was like, I like food and sports. I like alliteration. Let's go with Steak and Stiff Arms.
I like it.
Honestly, I wish I could give you like some real profound explanation. That's literally all it is. Like, I just read me and college football.
Sort of a half-baked idea is what you're saying.
Yeah, and I've actually thought for a while about changing it, because once my following started to grow, and then I would do like a TV show or something like that, and people started to recognize me a little bit. Like, I don't get recognized very often, especially not in Southern California. But if I go back to Columbus, for example, I'll get recognized a little bit there. If someone recognizes me, they shout out, hey, Steak and Stiff Arms. I think especially because like Elica's not an easy name to know how
no
to pronounce
how to
if you haven't
yeah.
heard it. And so they don't know if they should say Alika or Elika or like exactly. So they yell out, hey, Steak and Stiff Arms, which is really embarrassing. Like, I'm a grown woman and people are like shouting that at me. And so I thought about changing it to, hey, Elika. So that way, if they see me, they just shout out, hey, Elika, which makes perfect sense and is not embarrassing. But then the response to that is usually, no, you can't. You are Steak and Stiff Arms. And I'm like, that's kind of the problem, but
it's a tough call, because like, you want to be professional, and if you move up in the TV ranks, you would like your name to have some sort of association. But on the other hand, Steak and Stiff Arms is a badass name, and it's what everybody knows you by, so it's tough to go away from that.
It is.
All right, so now that we've established the background of your name, let's get to the content. And you were sharing your Super Bowl reactions, and of course you had actual sports reactions and game reactions. But today you went with a day later. There's really nothing to debate regarding Tom Brady. So can we just discuss how much better Lady Gaga is than Beyonce? That is a hot take of like Skip Baylessian magnitude.
Oh,
and you are bringing on.
You really pulled
like,
out the big guns there, didn't you?
Yeah, you're bringing out the beehive too, the bayhive, the anger from the bee fans. So explain yourself.
Okay, so first of all, I don't think Beehive is doing Beyonce any favors. They are literally the worst thing about Beyonce is Beehive, like flat out. And the thing I've never gotten about Beehive is they buy into like Beyonce's idea of, you know, creating your own identity and like being really proud of that and being like strong and independent. But then they basically like base their own identities on their love of this celebrity that they don't even know. Like, it's a total oxymoron to me. Does this make sense? Am I making sense here?
Yes.
Okay. Thank God. So like, they'll like come at you and then you'll like look at their Twitter profile and their picture is literally of Beyonce and their name is like some like warp of their own name and Beyonce's name. The only thing in their bio is like hashtag Beehive. And it's like, you're trying to tell me how strong and independent this woman is that you're hyping up right now, but you've completely lost your own identity in that entire quest. And then they're really rude and really obnoxious, which like, that's no way to get me to believe your point. Like, if you want to make an argument for somebody, you can go ahead and do that. But
right, back to your take. Don't blame it on
the
high. Like you, yeah.
Okay. Back to the take. I prefer Lady Gaga's music to Beyonce. So there's that. Like, that's just a personal preference thing. Honestly, in fairness to Beyonce, I actually don't have an issue with her. I just think she's massively overhyped. Like, I think anytime Beyonce is performing in anything, like the second she walks out, you see all these like Twitter reactions. And I'm often left wondering, like, if she walked out in a potato sack, would everyone who's like calling her the queen, I feel like they would still be doing it. Like, it was such an instant reaction that they haven't even had a chance to process what she was wearing or what she sounds like.
Right. But meanwhile, like, you're talking about Lady Gaga, who actually showed up to something in an egg and like a meat dress and a variety of other absurd things, like even more absurd than anything Beyonce has ever worn.
I agree 100%. And if there was a legion of people who are basically calling her the queen because she showed up in a meat dress, I would think that was ridiculous too. But I just don't see all of Twitter like praising her for the meat dress. Like, we talk about how freaking weird the meat dress is. Like, we call
right.
it what
so
it
Beyonce
is.
So Beyonce is beloved regardless, whereas Lady Gaga is beloved for substance. And she has an amazing singer.
She is. And I thought that performance was amazing.
I did think it was amazing. And I'm still torn on the people who said she didn't make enough of a political statement, because I do think she could have gone even harder. But then at the same time, like, singing This Land Is Your Land is very clearly a strong statement. And then her songs in and of themselves already carry so much weight in terms of equality and acceptance. So she didn't really need to say it because she was singing it. So it's kind
of I agree. I thought it was perfect, especially like I'm not a stick to sports kind of believer. But at the end of the day, even if she made no political statement, I actually would have been really fine with that. I personally and very frankly have some concerns over, you know, the political state of this country at this moment. But even if she had stayed completely away from that, I would have thought that was fine. It's a Super Bowl and it's an opportunity to use your platform, sure, but it's also about football and entertainment. And that's what it's supposed to be about. So if you let it just be this break from the things that are going on in the world, I would have been okay with that. That said, I think she made the political statement that she wanted to make. It was subtle and it was perfect. And I personally don't think equality and inclusiveness should be political. I don't think they should be partisan issues. But if you want to call it that, then I think she did the perfect job of saying exactly what she wanted to say, which is, this land is your land, this land is my land, this land was made for you and me.
Yeah. I actually talked about that in the intro to the pod, about the idea that somehow, like, the Super Bowl ads weren't as goofy and silly. There was a lot of very poignant ones with, like, deep messages. And what was crazy was the messages were very clearly appealing to a large swath of Americans that are feeling one way, quote unquote, politically, but they really weren't political. They were like, here, just like, love everyone, and like, all races and colors and ethnicities are great. And the fact that that is politicized right now is so deeply upsetting. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
And you know, I talk about this a lot on Izzy in Spain and the trifecta, and like, we do have certain regulations at ESPN about, you know, how to talk about things and how to, you know, if politics comes into sports, how to talk about it, but don't spend all of your time on a sports show getting political, quote unquote political. But I do feel like right now we're just, anything that people disagree on, we're labeling it politics. And there's a big difference between social issues and equal rights and civil rights and all that stuff and politics in quotations.
I saw someone tweet yesterday, and I don't remember who it was. I wish I could give them credit for this. But they basically said, we've now reached a point where if you are giving a message of inclusivity and equality, that's taken as a swipe at the president.
Right. That was Michael Ian Black, and that's who I talked about in the intro. Yeah.
Okay.
The actor.
Yeah, and I mean, it's so true. Like, none of this stuff that we're now calling politics should even be considered political. It shouldn't be partisan. Like, we should all be in this for one another. Now, we can have the debate about, you know, abortion rights and gun control and foreign policy and things like that. Like, that stuff, okay, like, let's keep that political. Let's respect the rights of one another to think differently and figure out, like, what's the common ground that we have. How can we figure out the best solutions to the problems that we face in this country? But the idea that a woman is just as much a human as a man, or that we appreciate and respect all religions and all ethnicities, like, that stuff, like, let's not make more things politicized than necessary.
Yeah, we're going to get into that a little bit more because I had something specific to ask about that. But I want to get to your career because I think it's interesting for people listening who maybe are wondering how to break in or if it's too late or if everything has to go by this very specific plan. Like, I'm going to go to school for journalism and then I'm going to get a master's and then I'm going to work for a small market. Like, you grew up in Orange County. Did you play sports growing up?
I didn't. No, not competitively. No.
But you were a fan based on your Ohio State family roots and your parents. So you've always been into sports, but you went off and, like, you were doing, quote unquote, real jobs, and you still do, right? So take me through, you know, what did you major in and what did you do starting right after college?
Yeah, I went to Long Beach State for undergrad. I studied marketing and management. I actually did an internship at ESPN my senior year of college. And oddly enough, my intern project was, like, directly correlated to ESPNU, which had just launched. So so I actually worked in a way for ESPNU about 9 to 10 years before I worked for ESPNU. So I did that in college. And then straight out of college, I went to get my MBA at Ohio State. I studied marketing and strategy. I did an internship with Victoria's Secret out in Columbus. That's where they're based.
And was the ESPNU internship, was that like you testing out whether sports would be an arena you'd want to work in?
In a marketing capacity, yes.
Okay.
So I did not grow up necessarily aspiring to be on camera in any way, shape, or form. Like, did I watch College Game Day as a kid and think it would be really cool to have that job? Yes, but it was not something that I actually saw for myself or pursued in any manner. So,
okay.
I did think that because I loved sports so much, it would be awesome to get to work in my chosen field in sports in some capacity. So hence the ESPN internship. So so I did a marketing internship actually for ESPN, and then that's when I got to work on ESPNU as one of my projects. So so I got my MBA.
So then you went
to Ohio
Victoria's
State.
Secret.
Yep. So I worked there for a summer in a marketing capacity again. And then after I graduated, this was summer of 2009, the economy was terrible. There were no real jobs to be had. And actually, Victoria's Secret told me they would have hired me if not for the fact that they laid off 500 people that summer. So that was great. I was feeling really good about my life at that point. I ended up taking an internship with a marketing agency based in Columbus. And, like, I now have an MBA and I'm taking an internship, I think, for like $14 an hour. And it was really just an opportunity to get my foot in the door and prove to them, like, hey, you should create a job for me, which they did. And I actually really enjoyed my internship there. There were certain other side issues going on as to why I didn't take that job. But I moved back to Southern California after that summer was over. And shortly thereafter, that same company opened up an office in Palo Alto. They called me and they asked if I'd be interested in interviewing and possibly moving to Northern California. So I ended up getting that job and I moved up to Northern California working for this digital marketing agency. So at this point, it's 2010, 2011. And that's when I started tweeting because I was working in digital marketing. So I was like, it takes all of 30 minutes to figure out how Twitter works, right? Like how favorites work, how retweets work. And then you're like, okay, now I know Twitter. And so I was thinking, well, it's probably more important that I figure out how to build a brand of some sort on Twitter. And that's kind of where the whole steak and stiff arms, the food and sports, like I was pondering that whole thing for a while. And then I started to kind of grow a small niche following because I was taking food pictures before I think they were like a big
a thing.
I'm not trying to say
before
sorry,
Instagram.
I didn't even start it, but like I don't think food porn was like a really big thing on social media when I was doing it. But I would like tweet out food porn, and I would live tweet while I was watching games. And so I grew like a small niche, mostly Ohio State following at that time. And I started getting a couple sites like reaching out to me asking if I'd be interested in writing. So I didn't take them up on it because I was like working full time. But at one point when I had quit that job in Palo Alto and I was figuring out what I was going to do next, they reached out. One of the sites was an Ohio State site. It's called 11warriors.com. And they had seen on Twitter that I was flying to Ohio for an interview with Victoria's Secret for a full-time job. And they reached out and asked if I'd be interested in writing. If I moved to Ohio, they're credentialed. I could go to games on Saturdays, write on Sundays, go back to my regular job Monday through Friday. I thought that might be cool. And they're like, and if you don't end up taking that job, you can still write for us. So I didn't end up moving to Ohio, but I did end up writing for 11 Warriors a couple times a week. And I think from there, my niche Ohio State following kind of grew a little bit more. And then it turned into kind of more of a college football and sports following. And about a year after I started writing, I got a direct message from somebody who is a much bigger college football writer than I ever was, saying that Jim Rome's people wanted my contact info. And I was, awesome. I thought that was a joke. I had no idea why, but I was not being very overly protective with my contact info if they wanted it. So I gave it. And one of his producers reached out and asked if I'd be interested in auditioning for a guest spot on Jim Rome's show. This was when he was on CBS Sports Network. So I did the audition, which was like a Skype call of like me and two producers, like throwing a bunch of sports questions at me for 30 minutes. And then the next day they called and asked if I would be able to fill in one day on Jim's show. So I ended up doing it. It was my first time on TV. I mean, as I mentioned, like I studied marketing and I got an MBA. So I like have no formal TV training. I to this day, I don't have a reel. And so I can't even believe they let me on the show, like in retrospect. And then I think they were just impressed that I didn't puke all over Jim and his desk. So then they brought me back a handful of times. And then after I did that, and I don't think that show even got significantly great ratings. If it did, it would probably still be around. But I do think that who does watch those shows are producers at other networks. And they started getting calls from other networks asking if I'd be interested in coming in and chatting with them. It was about that time that I, you know, developed a relationship with Fox Sports. It was prior to the days of FS1. And they had me do like a digital live stream with Clay Travis, Todd Furman, who's like a sports betting expert, and then Meta World Peace. It was amazing. We were like watching the first handful of games for March Madness out by the Hard Rock Pool, and it was like this like live web stream. So that was like the first thing I did for Fox, and we kept in touch. They asked me to come out and do an audition when they were doing FS1. And actually my audition really went well, but it was around that time I actually ended up accepting a full-time marketing job working for a global icon athletic superstar who shall remain nameless. I'm not going to name him on this, but I ended up taking a full-time job, but I kept the relationship. And then even like a couple years later, when I ended up switching jobs, Fox asked me if I would come on Fox Sports Live Countdown, which is also no longer. I have a tendency to get shows canceled, apparently. So I went on FS1 like a handful of times in spring of 2015. And then that's when my now coordinating producer at ESPNU saw me. And then he reached out kind of knowing that even though all the TV I had done had been discussing a variety of sports, saying like, I know college football is your favorite. We've been following you on Twitter. Would you have any interest in discussing coming and doing a show with us this fall? And so he totally took a risk on me because College Football Daily had a bit of an established format. It was usually a host and an analyst, and he wanted to bring in this wild card of like this girl who kind of gained a following by tweeting about sports. And like most of the stuff I tweet is like stupid jokes too. Like it's not even serious.
But that's what they wanted. I mean, so that show was originally, they wanted it to be the two of us with potentially one other person. And, you know, I had a couple other things going on. And as I've said, college football is not my wheelhouse. So it just was like not the right opportunity for me, even though I would have loved to work with you. And their goal was to get like big personalities. So not just people who love college football and can talk about it, but people who, you know, fans would want to watch that day of the week because that's the person they're tuning in for. And so it's clear to me like that's why they would go get you specifically and say like she's going to add something totally different to what we've usually done.
Yeah. So that was my first like regular fixed role in television. It was like College Football Daily Thursdays every week during football season. That was mine versus anything that I did on CBS Sports Network or FS1. Was more like filling in as a guest every now and then. And then this year they called and they asked me to come back twice as many days. So I got to do basically a similar role on College Football Daily, and then also do a show called Power Hour on Tuesday nights, which would follow the release of the College Football Playoff Committee rankings. And that show was like so much fun. It kind of felt like a sports nation that's like college football specific, if you will. We literally just got to have fun with all the things that had happened the previous weekend, and it was awesome. Like, never in a million years would I have guessed that someone would have paid me to go do stuff like that.
So tell me how you balanced that. So by the end, you were there 3 days a week?
No. So 2015, I was there 1 day a week. And then 2016, I was there Mondays and Tuesdays.
Mondays and Tuesdays. Oh, so one of the shows you did two a day. And so your travel schedule is insane because you're still technically working full time at the other place, and they're just letting you have a couple days off. Or how did you manage to finagle the real job, quote unquote, with the TV work?
Yeah, so I actually only had that arrangement last year.
Okay.
This year, or this past season, I should say, I actually quit the full-time job before this season for separate reasons from the TV thing kind of facilitated the timing of it, but for separate reasons. But what I did last year, I mean, in case anyone is interested in figuring out how to finagle these things, in 2015, I was only doing the show on Thursdays, and it was out of Charlotte, and I live on the West Coast. So I don't typically take a lot of vacation. So I basically asked my manager and our managing director if I could basically just take one vacation day a week during football season instead of taking like a 2 week trip to Thailand or whatever like normal people do with vacation time. And so I worked Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Wednesday nights at like 1 a.m., I got on a red eye out of LAX, and I would fly to Charlotte. I would land the next morning. I would go to Starbucks and get like a double shot of espresso. I would do the show, and then I would go right back to the airport. I would fly back, and I would land probably at like 10 p.m. I'd be in bed by midnight, and I would go back to work the next day.
Wow. Wow. See, I'm always trying to tell people, like, if you want to work in this industry, especially early on, you have to, like, really want it. You have to do stupid stuff. You have to have a crazy schedule. I remember I went to have drinks with a girl once who wanted advice on stuff, and she was just like, the thing is, I don't want to have to work weekends or nights or, like, holidays. And I was like, okay, well, then you should definitely find a different job, like 100% find a different job. Okay, so you quit so that you could do the 2 days a week. So do you have another gig, or are you mostly just your ESPNU and then trying to continue to push for just the TV sports reporter? Like, that's going to be what you do now?
I am. Well, so I was facetiously referring to myself as unemployed. I've had other people tell me I should refer to it as a free agent.
Or fun employed.
Fun employed. I guess you could say that. I'm always having fun. So, Mike Bullock Jr. was the one who's like, if you're good at what you do, you're a free agent. You're not unemployed.
There you go.
So, So I'm going to take Mike's word for that. So I'm just kind of figuring out what's next. I mean, I don't want to start naming other entities that I'm talking to at the moment, but there are a few I am discussing, and I'm going to take probably a month or two, as every major sports outlet is coming back from all the Super Bowl hoopla that's been going on, and kind of to have some meetings with them. I need to talk to ESPN, kind of figure out where each entity sees me fitting into what they're doing, and then figure out what my life plan is based on that. I actually don't have a specific thing mapped out at the moment, but, you know, I wouldn't have quit the full-time job or felt confident in kind of what's coming up if I wasn't confident in my own abilities, and whether that's sports broadcasting or it's utilizing my MBA and just finding a marketing job that I'm super passionate about. Like, I'm pretty easy to please. Like, I think I'll be fine either way, but that's kind of where I'm at right now.
That's funny, because I do believe that, like, whatever you're using your skill set for, you'll be happy with. And there are people who are like, I'll die if I don't do this. Like, this is what I was meant to do. And sometimes it's actually better when you're someone who's like flexible and passionate about it, but not so caught up in it that you take it too seriously. And I think sometimes people ask, you know, how do you not get nervous doing X or Y? And I'm like, I don't know. It's just like talking, you know, I don't think about it that much. And I think sometimes the people who put so much weight in everything they do it's kind of visible. You know, you can tell how hyper aware that they are of themselves, of what they're doing with their hands, of what words they're using, of what they look like. And they never let you relax when you're watching them. And I think you have a really conversational style, in part because you're like, this is awesome. Whatever. I'm having fun. Like, and if it doesn't work out, it's cool.
Letting me do this.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Last January, ESPNU had me co-hosting like a pregame show for the national championship out in Arizona. And like, I had to throw a pie in someone's face and I'm like, I can't believe I'm holding like an ESPN mic and like throwing a pie in someone's face right now. I really don't know how this happened. And while I have a lot of respect and a little bit of envy for the people who kind of know, like, it's this or bust for me, like I have to be doing this. Because I feel like there is actually a sense of calm with like not being distracted by things in the periphery. For me personally, if I had grown up wanting only to be a sports reporter, I actually don't know that it would have worked out for me, because I think I've had young women reach out to me and be like, how do I get to do what you're doing? And I basically tell them the whole story I just told you. And what I tell them is, if I had decided at 12 years old that I wanted to be doing college football television, I would have thought that the only route to doing that was to be a sideline reporter. And I would have thought that to be a sideline reporter, I need to go to a school and study broadcast journalism and then go to a small market and get a reel and then go to like a medium-sized market and get a reel and do that. But meanwhile, as social media would be growing, I would think that I have to keep my opinions out of everything, because reporters technically were not supposed to be opinionated. They were supposed to bring the story to you, but not tell you what they thought about it. And if I had been like, oh my gosh, it's like college football TV or bust, and I was following all the steps to do it, well, I would be competing against all these other people who had the exact same mindset and were going about it the exact same way. And then it becomes like a supply and demand thing. Whereas the only reason I got any of the opportunities I got was because I wasn't trying to be on TV, and because I was just naturally an opinionated person who enjoyed the things that I was watching and I would talk about them. So I got kind of lucky in terms of timing, because if I had done what I was doing 10 years prior, there's no way this opportunity would have come up for me. But on the same token, like, if I had made it my life's work to get on TV, like, yeah, does hard work and determination get you places? Absolutely it does. Is it harder when you're looking, like, when you're vying for like one spot that like 2,000 other people also want? Totally. I kind of was like auditioning for something I didn't even know existed.
Right. And actually, like, I talk about that a lot too, that I'm glad that I didn't really see people doing the job. I'm not glad, like, maybe my life would be even, you know, think that I would have gotten into this even earlier and I would have been farther ahead by now. But by not seeing women doing what I wanted to do, there were no Michelle Beatles and Katie Nolans. And you know, there was amazing women like Linda Cohn, but their expectation there was like a certain level of seriousness for anchors, and then just not a ton of opportunity for personality with sideline reporting. It was very quick and in and out. And so I wanted to do comedy and have more personality. So that sent me out to LA to like do a million other things that gave me much more like well-rounded insight into the world and better stories to tell and better opinions on things, because I wasn't so one note that I was just watching sports nonstop all the time. So it's interesting that you mentioned that, because I do think also we both took very circuitous routes that weren't exactly what the expectation is. And it's working for you. I wonder, you know, since you're not full-time ESPN and since you're now a free agent and figuring it out, you're pretty outspoken about politics. You know, you're an Iranian-American woman. Like, you have thoughts on all these things. Do you worry at all about being vocal about that stuff now, not knowing what the potential opinions of your, like, potential employers are on those things?
I do and I don't. I mean, you and I are friends on Facebook because you and I are friends in real life. I don't accept people into my Facebook who I don't personally know. So I do tend to funnel like more of my quote unquote political opinions to Facebook, so that I'm only keeping like 10% of it on Twitter. When I do discuss things on Twitter, I don't have a huge filter, but I do try to view it from the lens of like, is what I'm saying political, or is it about being human? Or is it about humanizing me and my family to other people? I mean, you mentioned being Iranian American. And so I was a little bit outspoken about this travel ban right now, because it does actually impact me and my family. And I think something that my family has been wondering for, you know, since my parents moved here in the 70s, is how do you get people to appreciate the value and the benefit of, like, your little minority community and the value that you bring to this country? So I think I would be remiss if, as a college football analyst on ESPNU, which I don't know what could be more American than, like, a woman who eats steak and bacon, drinks Budweiser, and, like, talks about college football on TV. But if I can talk to you and tell you about, like, my family and how my parents met at Ohio State and how my dad was the reason that I got into college football. But, like, oh, by the way, they're also Iranian American. And, like, they're the ones who taught me why America is so great, because their opportunities came from this country and they did not take that for granted. And they did what they could to give back to this country, to give back to their communities, to give back to their neighbors, and, like, you know, build businesses and create jobs and pay their taxes and things like that. I think it would be silly of me to not mention that. And I think it would also be silly of anyone to think of that as political. I mean, we can debate the political issues that come from that, but I think first there has to be a common understanding that, like, my family contributes to this society. I contribute to this society. Like, I am just as American as anybody else. You know what I mean? So that's kind of where I go with the politics on Twitter, I would say. If a future employer had an issue with it, I would imagine that my employment with them would not be so great. And therefore, I'm probably doing myself a service if I'm disqualifying myself for that job.
Exactly.
I come from a sense of security in that, as you know, like, I have an MBA and I have years of marketing experience. I don't think I'm going to have a ton of trouble, like, finding myself a full-time marketing job, because, like, I tweeted, like, hey, I'm Iranian American and my family is just as American as yours. Like, I don't think employment is going to be an issue for me long term.
I agree, unless you want to work for Breitbart News. Before we go.
I didn't see that happening, but okay.
Before you go, we have one more thing. You know what time it is, Allie?
I didn't expect a kind of Spanish Inquisition. Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition.
That's right. It's the Spanish Inquisition. The same questions I ask all of my guests. Number one, what's the natural talent you wish you were gifted with?
Oh, singing.
It's everybody's, like, answer. Well, almost everybody's, like, answer. I need to get a professional singer on, so I'll get a different answer.
The only thing that I ever, like, sing publicly is happy birthday, and that's because you're a total a-hole if you don't sing when everyone else is singing, and because it's in a group. But
so no karaoke
that,
for,
like,
you.
Okay, I've done it maybe, like, three times in my life. But it's really more for everybody else's benefit that I don't. Like, not so much myself. It's, like, nobody wants to hear me sing.
Number two, what's your desert island album? You can only have one.
Oh, my God. This one's so... I'm just going to say the first thing that popped into my head. I know everyone already, like, has this answer ready. I actually don't. I don't think I'm a big music person, despite my music hot take earlier today. I'm, like, obsessed with Sublime Santeria.
Okay. More so than Pony by Genuine?
Well, you said, like, album. Like, so. Okay.
Oh, you meant Santeria, the album.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, you're allowed to have that answer. It's not bad. It'd be good on a desert island,
too. Genuine is my favorite song of all time.
But also, Sublime is great, like, SoCal, so it'd be good for desert island. It, like, fits the area. Number three, if you could switch lives. Go ahead.
Sorry. Well, I just had to say, like, if you're on a desert island, the implication is that you're alone. And, like, I think listening to Pony on repeat alone would be, like,
very
the most
depressing.
Frustrating thing of all time. Yeah.
That is a very good point. So, very good point. If you could switch lives with someone for a day, who would it be?
I'm going to go with Lady Gaga because I think that's topical.
Very topical and would be awesome. Number four, what's the most scared you've ever been?
Oh, scared I've ever been. I'm trying to, I went skydiving And as much as it was my favorite thing I've ever done, and I highly recommended it, and I loved the entire day, that, like, 2 seconds when you're, like, about to jump and you're jumping, like, and you're kind of, like, in that midair, like, your feet just left the plane, that's definitely the most scared I've ever been.
I just
jumped out of a plane.
I love that your death-defying tale was accompanied by my dog, who found a squeaky toy hiding and brought it in to show me. So in the background, I hope that everyone can hear the giant squeaky worm that he just dragged in here. Number 5.
I actually didn't hear it, but...
Oh, well, yeah. All right, good. Well, just okay. So you guys all know, while she was telling her death-defying tale, my dog dragged a giant squeky worm in here. Number 5.
Stupid landline that's been ringing, as if anybody still has a landline.
That is true, but that's the glory of podcasts, is it's very casual, so I don't even bother locking my dogs downstairs.
Totally.
What habit or quality do you think has contributed most to your success?
My outspoken nature, 100%. Like, I grew up in a house where we talked about anything at the dinner table. And I don't mean this in, like, a me kind of way, but, like, I never felt like my opinion was to be, like, suppressed. Like, I thought my thoughts were important. Like, not more important than yours, but as important as yours.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that answer. Number 6, what's the thing about yourself you'd most like to improve?
Oh, I am not a morning person. I can, like, fake a smile and I can make it happen, but I'm not, like, easily inherently by nature a get up at 5 a.m., go to the gym and get your day started with, like, a smile on your face without any coffee kind of person. And I think, like, morning people are the most successful people, and I wish I could be more of that.
You know what? I've read enough BuzzFeed / internet articles that say that the most successful people go to sleep late, then I'm just going to keep believing it even if it's not true, because I am also not a morning person. I know, but when the fake news serves me, I think there's also one that says, like, if you swear a lot, you're smarter. I'm all in on that one. Like, I'll just buy into all those Facebook shared stories that fit into the narrative that I need.
Number swearing one.
Right, exactly. And finally, what 3 words would you most hope people use to describe you?
Kind, intelligent, and fun.
Kind, intelligent, and fun. Those are great qualities. And, you know, if you're putting out a singles call to arms, too, those are solid. You love to laugh. And
maybe I just did.
Maybe you just did. She's going to send out a video along with the podcast with that, like, blurry 80s background where she talks about what she likes and people have to dial her number if they're interested. We should get back to those. Those were a great idea. Forget apps. People should have to still throw in a VHS. Thanks so much for making time for me. We could talk forever, but I've got to run. And we'll have to have you back on next time. Maybe we'll have you on when you can reveal your next career step.
Sounds good. Hopefully that won't
be
too long.
Whether we will remain teammates or otherwise. We'll have to see.
Friends or foes.
Yeah, otherwise I'll just trash you on every pod.
Dang it.
Oh, and another thing.
Long interview, great interview. Love talking to Elika. If you don't follow her at Steak and Stiff Arms, she's awesome. Go check her out. So I'll make this quick. I am going to Saturday Night Live this weekend. If you listened to my pod last week with Kenan Thompson, you heard me mention it. I am so psyched. Alec Baldwin is hosting. Ed Sheeran is singing. I'm going to be in the room where all of the magic has happened over the years that I have been watching since I was literally as old as I can remember. So next pod is going to be at least some stories from what should be, like, one of the most amazing experiences of my life. And I hope I'm not building it up too much since I've been waiting for it my entire life. But I don't think there's any way I could be disappointed, because I will just be so overjoyed to be there. So make sure you tune in next week and hear those great stories. Thanks, as always, for lasting about an hour with me.